Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We're going to talk to Miles Simmons, NFL insider, Pro Football Talk, in less than 5 minutes. He's a regular now on Wednesdays. I'm sure everyone keeps track of our schedule. Anyway, he's on Wednesdays now. Alex White, Alexander White is here. Second place in the Circa Invitational a year ago? Second place.
That's correct.
Second place. Top female first handicapper season in the world, and public record show it. That's what matters when you go. I'm not setting you up for any pressure this year and maybe getting the title. Felica won it last year?
No.
Oh, it was Chuck Edel.
It was Chuck Edel.
Chuck Edel.
Yep. Felica actually was.
He made a run. He got off to a bad start, like Brett McMurphy did. McMurphy never came out of it, but Felica did.
I know last year you, like halfway through, you were asking me and kind of like, are you nervous? You're just, you know, your record's out there. And I was like, no, I didn't even really think of it. Now this year, it's
and I've kind of set it up.
I got to channel my Dan Mullen, just be chill, right?
Calm down.
Just been here.
Calm down. Yeah. I wish you knew the reference. Anyone on the show knew the reference to the old BK chicken, the chicken yelling on Burger King commercials. Says, calm down. I want to go back to what John Von Tobel was saying with some of these future bets. And I know it was a draft and it's not like an A-plus grade on all these. Do you like Derrick Henry to lead the league in rushing at 4-1 at this age? I mean, I know he was still great.
But when does
a drop-off happen, and is that enough value?
I think his yards per carry were actually better than Saquon too, right? Saquon just had a few that he really broke off. I don't know, that kind of worries me. And how the playoffs happen for them, I feel like they're going to want to save him, right, for the postseason. I don't know. It's tough.
I got to clean something up, actually add to it from hour number one. If you weren't listening, we have really got a laundry list of football reality shows. Not reality / documentaries, really more documentaries. So we got Hard Knocks, we got SEC on Netflix, Any Given Saturday. There's a Mike Vick deal out there. There's Quarterback 2. There's also now an 8-part series on the Cowboys, and it starts with Jerry Jones. It actually starts with Cowboys history. So there's a lot of people who are of the age, say 30 and under, who might have just a passing knowledge of how great the Cowboys were in the 70s, run by Tom Landry and Tex Schramm and Gil Brandt. I know Griffin really got into the documentary watching it the last couple of days, and we're not going to spoil it, but that's one of the best things about it is they show the history and then when Jerry Jones comes in. But there's also a couple of funny moments where you can see how media coverage and accuracy was not as detailed as it is now. Now, I know right now there's a few people driving off the road because you have been taught that the media is worse than ever. And it's not. There's more people who say they're media, so the net is bigger. There's more jabronis. There's more of a demand for hits and hot takes. Not everyone does the same thing. So I always say almost every day, we're not a monolith, okay? We all don't do the same thing. The reason I say this is, I'll give you a small example. First of all, Alex, you don't have to agree with this, but you know that there are many dudes out there who are like, he's talking sports. I don't like this, right? So there's an extra level of accuracy that you guys have to reach. And the other day, Monica McNutt, who is Knicks announcer, you know, former college basketball player, WNBA insider, she's in a talk show format set up, and that guy Drewski comes on, and he's got a 20 Sanders jersey on. And she gaffed, and she thought it was something connected to Shedeur Sanders. And people are like, immediately they're like, D.I., this is why women can't bet. Like, she made a mistake in a live spot. I'm not saying that NFL bosses have to have the same amount of accuracy, but Griffin, what did you notice when you watched the Cowboys and some of the highlights from drafts, which were very rudimentary, even in the 80s and early 90s. And that's why I hate doing this. I bash people and no one even knows who they are. And these people are taking strays. Like there was a guy, Dr. Z, Paul Zimmerman, who was just, he was just a curmudgeon, but not like a Cofield curmudgeon, because I'm fun. But like he wasn't qualified to be on TV. Frankly, at the beginning, Berman was barely qualified. What did you notice about Pete Rozelle in the draft where the Cowboys took Michael Irvin?
He just did not take the time to clear that throat. It was just, he came up to the mic. He tried to announce the pick and it just sounded like a gargling mess. And he had to sit up there on the podium and clear his throat in front of, I don't know how many people were watching back then, but
not many back then. Trust me.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like he was
very, like the Chicago Hilton, right. But here's the issue. He's a number 11 pick in the draft. He's arguably the biggest star coming out of college football. He really was a megastar. People hated him. And he's like, with a number 11 pick in the NFL draft, the Cowboys take Marshall Irvin. You're like, no. And listen, is it that big a deal? No. But when I just saw Monica McNutt get dragged because she gaffed over Barry Sanders and Shedeur Sanders, like, you do realize the fine-tooth comb that we just rake across everyone, sports media and otherwise, on accuracy, because it's just everything is exposed now.
Right.
Like, people make mistakes. Pete Rozelle wasn't perfect, nor is McNutt. I don't have a segue for that. Miles Simmons is in. Miles, I hope that you watch the Dallas Cowboy 8-part series. I think on the surface, it seems like it may be arduous, but I got to tell you, coming out of the gates, it was freaking awesome, because even for an old head like me, there was stuff they brought up, and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot what Jerry Jones' entrance into the NFL was actually like.
Yeah, I did watch the first episode last night. It's very, very good. I mean, because you saw people hyping it up basically all day long on Twitter, and then, you know, you're like, oh, okay. I mean, you know, like, is it really gonna be like really good, or is it just kind of Jerry Jones propaganda? Which, like, yeah. It is. It is Jerry Jones propaganda, yeah. But it's the kind of propaganda that works on me. I'll be honest. You know, that kind of stuff, like The Last Dance. Those that, like, it's good. It's really well done. And so I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it. You know how I am about some of these documentaries, Steve. I don't always want to really get into them, but this one I do want to dig into. It's really good.
I never liked Tom Landry. I like him now.
Wow.
So I don't even know if you saw that part yet. I'm not going to spoil it, but what a sympathetic character Jerry Jones made him into. And it just told you all that you were going to get with Jerry Jones moving forward. Holy crap. Again, I don't want to ruin it. You got to watch that part. It's pretty incredible.
But
Miles Simmons is
the thing is, though. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, like, they were coming off a 3-13 season. Like, you know, I mean, so.
Oh, he was terrible. I believe Skip Bayless. He was, by the way, they're like, he's falling asleep in meetings. He seemed groggy. And then I was like, oh, he must have been like 75 years old. He was 64.
Right. Yeah. I know.
Like, he wasn't that old.
I'm like, oh.
Like, Belichick's 100 right now, and he's still pretty sharp.
Well, you know, he's relates to college stage students pretty well. We know that.
I was actually gonna tie a joke with Belichick and Tom Landry with a 23-year-old.
Oh, well, close enough.
Come on, I kinda Bill. Did it. You did, but you did it subtly, and then I had to blow it up and be a jackass.
That's
about
fine.
It. All right, I want to mention real quick that Arch Manning countered Grandpa. I don't know if you saw this, but I remember Archie was like, 2 years minimum. He's not draft next year. Not going to happen. And Arch was like, I talked to my grandfather. He apologized for making that comment. So this kind of makes, you know, as the season goes along and teams are bad, it kind of does add a lot more intrigue if that is not a given that he's going to be in the draft, say, 2 or 3 years from now, might be next year.
Well, yeah, sure. But it also is supposed to be a much better quarterback draft in 2026 in general. I mean, you got the Clemson kid, Kubnik, if that's how you pronounce his name. And there are other, I mean, Drew Aller, Penn State, Garrett Nussmeier at LSU. Like, that's, there are a bunch of QBs. And, you know, it could be another situation like we saw in 24 where, oh my gosh, you know, you've got Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, JJ McCarthy, you know, everybody's coming off the board really, really quickly. Michael Penix, also another one of those guys. So, like, I think there is the possibility that happens again in 26, irrespective of whether or not Arch comes off, Arch decides to come out of Texas or not. But I mean, if you are Arch Manning and you think you're going to be really good and you're going to play for Texas this year, and you don't necessarily know who's going to be really bad in the NFL, and there are teams that have two first round picks like the Browns, which doesn't sound so great, but also the Los Angeles Rams have two first round picks. They can, in theory, move up, go and get you. I think that makes it more intriguing to just keep your options open. You know, why close that door? You don't know what's going to happen, right? Matt Leinart, if he had come out of the draft a year earlier than he decided to, probably would have been a number one overall pick. Instead, he went to the Arizona Cardinals, and like basically nobody ever heard of him until he reemerged on Fox years later after his NFL career. So like, that's why I think it makes a lot of sense to just keep your options open. And that's, I think Arch Manning makes all the sense in the world when he says, yeah, I talked to my grandpa and he apologized for that.
Let's go to the Colts here, different quarterbacks. And it was announced that Daniel Jones would be the starting quarterback week one. Why are so many people so shocked about this and kind of acting like it's the end of the world and the end of Anthony Richardson's career?
Well, the problem with Anthony Richardson right now is that you're going into year three, and year three is extraordinarily determinative in the NFL, in large part because you have to decide, the team has to decide whether or not they're going to exercise your fifth year option, which then is going to guarantee you that fifth year salary right after they basically have to do it after the season. They do it in the spring, right? So if you're not going to be a starter in your third year, there's no reason in the world to think that you're going to get paid as a quarterback, you know, going into year four, right? Or year five, whatever it is. So that's partially why it's kind of like, all right, well, they tried this for 2+ years and it's not working with Anthony Richardson. And, you know, it's not, well, guess that's it completely, but like, it is, because unless Daniel Jones gets hurt and Anthony Richardson has to play for an extended period of time, and he plays extremely well, there's no reason to think that Anthony Richardson is going to be anything but like a flamed out quarterback. And it's unfortunate because I think I put this on Twitter. Like, there is, I think, institutional blame to go around for the failure of Anthony Richardson. Like, some of it, most of it probably, let's call it that, is on the Colts. I don't know that they really set him up to succeed. Right. But also he couldn't stay healthy. And that's not necessarily anybody's fault. But Anthony Richardson did not apparently do a great job of controlling the controllables. And so when I hear things about Cam Ward, right, number one pick this year, and he's at Tennessee and he's coming in the building at like 5 a.m. every day. He's the cliche, one of the first in, one of the last to leave, la, la, la. And he's putting in as much time as he needs to in order to understand the offense. His teammates are gravitating toward him. You have all these things. Like, who needed to teach Cam Ward that, right? That's something that he's gone now from zero star recruit to day one starter in the NFL after being a number one overall pick. You look at Anthony Richardson, and this is somebody that was benched in the middle of his second year because his study habits weren't good enough. Right. And I read something in The Athletic, and I wish I could remember who wrote it. At this point, I don't, but it was basically that Sam Ellinger, who is like a third string quarterback who was in either his second year or basically had to tell Anthony Richardson that he needed some type of book, and like he had to read something in order to increase his study habits and make his study habits better. So when you're having to have the third string quarterback who like got beat to hell in his rookie year when Frank Reich was about to, like, has to tell you like you need to study better. And that's not something that we know. I mean, part of it is he's young. You know, he hasn't had a chance to mature. He hasn't played very much. I mean, going back to his time at Florida, barely had any starts. Then he gets to the NFL and he gets hurt and it's this and it's that. Like, it's an institutional failure at all levels. But, like, I don't know where you go from here with an Anthony Richardson, because he obviously needs to change the scenery. But if you're any team, why would you want that guy? I mean, like, he's just a ball of clay in some ways. And I kind of hate to say this because it kind of gives credence to the earlier comment, but like, is Anthony Richardson what Bill Polian thought Lamar Jackson was? I don't know. I mean, but he's at least much closer to that than Lamar Jackson ever was.
Well, that's a loaded question. That's a real loaded question. You know, it's funny on Lamar. I cannot remember the college. No, it was an NFL pro. Actually, you know who it was? I think it was Pat Kerwin on SiriusXM NFL. And he was talking about the scout of Lamar Jackson that Lamar didn't run that much at Louisville, and he was a more polished passer. And I was like, God dang, that's a different narrative than I remember hearing coming out into the draft when Bill Polian kind of fell for that wide receiver question. And remember that, too. Bill Polian was fed that question about wide receiver, and I think he was a little thrown off, and now it's turned into this whole thing. Here's a problem with Anthony Richardson. Like, could Lamar Jackson be a wide receiver? Maybe. I don't think Anthony Richardson has another position. Because right now, stop. Don't even say this one. He ain't a tight end. Tight end is so much harder in the transition than anyone, like, even can imagine.
Right. No, you're right.
He needs to go somewhere. I mean, sort of the Trey Lance path where he bounces around a little bit. I think Trey Lance is in a good spot. I think Trey Lance has looked good in L.A. with the Chargers. I think he still has to work on that. I've seen more than a few shots to the end zone where it's like, zoom! Line drive, like just a little air underneath it, but I think he's looked good. He was not ready to be the number four pick in the draft. The Colts, no. You're right. He should not be getting most of the blame. He was overdrafted, and that's on the organization.
100% overdrafted and underdeveloped. And so, like, that's where I look at position coach, right? Why wasn't the quarterback's coach like in his ear being like, hey, man, these are the things that you need to do to be a pro? And if he was and Richardson still didn't do it, then like that speaks to a bigger issue, I guess. But, you know, I just feel like if you are going to draft a guy that high, and even Chris Ballard has admitted this year that, you know, Anthony Richardson was drowning. But that's Chris Ballard's word, not mine, drowning when Anthony Richardson first started in the National Football League. And, you know, they wanted him to play because he needed to get experience. But also, like, I don't know, sometimes it's better if you have a project quarterback to sit him and make sure that he can actually learn. But that's the thing. Like, if you are drafted number four overall, right? And again, we have the fifth year option thing for a reason. Like, there is an expectation that at some point you're going to be ready to play. And going into year three is when you have to be ready to play. You have to be ready to make the jump between all right, yeah, I think you can be a starter maybe to, hey, this guy's a bona fide pro, right? And he's not there. And you knew that last year watching him play when he couldn't complete even 48% of his passes. That's a crazy stat too. One of my buddies sent me this. If you take away passes behind the line of scrimmage, Anthony Richardson's completion percentage last year was 36%. It's not playable. So if that's the stuff you're dealing with, then yes, overdrafted, underdeveloped, can't perform to the level and the standard needed to operate as an NFL quarterback. And we watched him miss a blitz protection earlier in this summer, like 2 weeks ago, right? And then he ended up dislocating his pinky because he didn't see the blitz. So like all of those things, I understand why they go with Daniel Jones over Anthony Richardson, but it's still like, I think the situation sucks. Like, I don't think the situation is particularly fair. But this is a results-based business. And again, if you are a quarterback who was drafted at number four overall and you can't perform to the level of being a starter going into year three, part of that's on you.
Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk on Cofield and Company. Let's go to the glamour state for the NFL, Ohio. Let's start with Cincinnati. I understand the goal of, hey, get the starters out there. Let's get off to a quicker start. Let's be prepped to start things, but last week looked really bad with Joe Burrow running for his life, and they did make the decision, I guess it was announced today, that, you know what, yeah. Burrow and the starters are not going to play in the final preseason game. So, but I do hope, hey, he escaped death, basically. I do hope that does work for them early in the season and they get off to a good start. I still do fear, though, that some of the drama with the contracts is going to be debilitating. So what do you think of the Bengals this year?
I mean, I think that they will have a good offense and that their defense is probably going to struggle again. The thing that was so alarming to me about the Bengals the other night, I mean, when they had that long run, when the Commanders had that long run for a touchdown, I mean, that's a simple power play, man. Like that, I was running that in high school. And you mean to tell me that NFL defenders, then these were the starters on the Bengals. You mean to tell me that those defenders can't run fit better than that? Like, is that effort? What are they being coached? I just don't understand why that's so bad. And that's something that Al Golden, their new defensive coordinator, has to fix, because that's ridiculous. No NFL defense should allow that kind of simple power play to break for that many yards. I mean, it's ridiculous. But the other issue that I had with Cincinnati the other night is that Zach Taylor was not calling plays that made life easy enough for Joe Burrow. And Joe Burrow was doing a really terrible job of getting rid of the ball, Why are you extending plays, dude? It's not week three. It's not even week one. It's week minus two. Stop. There's no reason to do this. So when he's running around trying to avoid sacks and not just throw the ball away, like, get hit for an intentional grounding. Who gives a crap? Like, live to play the next down and just get your work in and get off the field, because the only thing you're doing is exposing yourself to injury. So I don't understand that. Like, when I look at Andy Reid and how he plays Patrick Mahomes in the preseason, it is three-step drops. It is a couple handoffs. It is, all right, let's roll you out to the right. Let's roll you out to the left. Keep you out of harm's way. If it's not there, get rid of it. Like, there's none of this, like, oh, seven-step drop. Well, I guess we're going to look and see. Oh, well, no, I got to extend the play. What are you doing? Get rid of the ball. Go down, do something else. But the only thing you're doing right now is risking injury in a game that doesn't count. And the funny thing is, they're going to go to Cleveland and they're going to get beat by the Browns in week one by Joe Flacco. I don't care what you say.
Miles Simmons is with us. Let's close on this one. I think there are a lot of cases where I see athletes and coaches speak and there's a PR fail. Come on, guys. You're paid to do a job. Even if your coach is a stubborn ass or someone is as big as Miles Garrett, we don't do the speeding thing. That answer was ridiculous. Deshaun Foster is still learning how to be a head coach. On the field is hard enough. The PR part of it, you got to have experts who are going to school him on things. The exchange with him and the media kind of shutting down almost all the access. And he's worried about secrets getting out. You know, there's a way to stop the media from filming certain parts of practice and releasing videos. But now he's cut off almost all of the access, which is counterproductive to UCLA in terms of attention, building a program, building a fan base, selling tickets. And his simple answer was like, I don't want secrets out and we'll win, so that'll sell tickets. All right, Deshaun.
Yeah. Good luck with that. I mean, you know, ask the Chargers like how well that works. And I mean, I live here. I've lived in LA for like the better part of the last 10 years, right? So UCLA is not really on people's radar when it comes to football. Like, USC absolutely is. I'm not just saying that because I'm a Trojan now, but like, it's weird the way that I think some coaches want to major in the minor. And this absolutely happens more at the college level. And it's part of why Matt Rule failed at Carolina, you know, because he was like this. But you want to control everything and all the information instead of just treating people like people, you know. And I don't understand why you wouldn't want more publicity about your program. You wouldn't want to, especially in the Big Ten, right? This is not a big Ten program. Like, now, so you are going to be fighting for attention with other better football programs in the area. You've left campus in order to, I don't know, foster something community, no pun intended. Like, and that to me makes sense, but why are you not allowing coverage? Why aren't you like allowing players to talk? Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. And it's majoring in the minor, and it to me is an early sign that a football coach is not going to do very well, especially at a program that needs the publicity, you know? So good luck to you, Deshaun Foster. Good luck.
Miles, great job, man. I appreciate you doing Wednesdays. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
There he is, Miles Simmons, PFT, Pro Football Talk. Miles A. Simmons up on Twitter. On the way back, we go back out to L.A., get the on-the-ground L.A. report on the Dodgers, a little bit of Rams talk, also what's going on with the 2028 L.A. Olympics. A lot of people on the ground in L.A. are starting to say, you know, we don't have the money for this. We got too many important things that we got to deal with. Arash Markazi is up.
Mr. L.A., Mr. Vegas, Arash Markazi joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, Arash, coming up in less than 90 seconds. Want to remind you, the game day experience down at Allegiant Stadium for UNLV games is getting stronger and stronger. And one of the cool places to hang out down there is Whiskey Stadium, right across the street from the stadium there on Polaris. Griffin is going to be on the scene this Saturday before UNLV and Idaho State, 11-1. You can take on the Mullen Food Challenge. I'll give you the details on all the food you got to eat. He's also got special items on the menu, the Mullen menu at Whiskey. He's got the Mullen Burger and the chicken cheesesteak. So get on down to Whiskey this week on Saturday, 11-1, before the game. Griffin's going to be there signing up people for prizes, giveaways, and he may even do the Mullen Challenge and impress everyone as a kind of a Joey Chestnut, but like bigger. And slightly more athletic than Chestnut. He's a hell of an athlete, one of the greatest in the world. Arash is up. What's up, Arash?
Not much. Just living the dream.
This is the real Arash. It's not the fake Arash. I got to get your take on What is going on the Vegas Strip? What is going on at the clubs? That was the fakest of fake Justin Biebers I've ever seen. How did anyone fall for that?
It was hilarious, you know, because you don't know how guys look these days. And so I'm looking at the video when it was first posted thinking, like, that doesn't look like Justin Biebers. Like, wouldn't you think that, like, a publicist or a manager or something, what, like, you think, like, the Biebs is just going to show up
right
to the XS nightclub and just want, like, he could just show up and want to get a free table, but, like, you think he would want to perform? Like, it was just, it seemed so crazy and weird. A hilarious story, though.
That was the real Matt Stafford at practice this week, right?
Yes, that's big news for the Rams, yes.
Let's talk about this. In terms of what the Rams are feeling, what the market's feeling about Matt Stafford and his durability, and if he can play a bunch of these games, most of the games.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird feeling on Saturday because Sean McVay essentially took the day off. He allowed his assistant head coach to coach the game for him. And they were very secretive. Not only did the team not comment, but obviously the one-day head coach of the team, Aubrey Pleasant, did not comment. Like, and again, these were simplistic questions, Steve. It was like, did Matthew Stafford like work out pregame? Like, would that was the plan? Like, did he work out? I can't comment on that. Was he like even at SoFi? Like was he in the locker room? Was he on the sideline? Can't comment on that. It was just like weird things, and they were like, McVay will comment on Monday, which is like in 2 days, and you're at that point you're thinking the worst. So thankfully, he walked onto the field. He practiced, went 11-on-11, practiced back-to-back days, which is great. So things are trending in the right direction for Matthew Stafford.
You're not Dr. Arash, but I'm going to ask you as if you stayed at whatever hotel and makes you really smart. I heard one of the afternoon guys on ESPN National, Freddie Coleman, kind of going down this whole path of like back injuries are bad. He was saying he doesn't think that Matt Stafford can play 13 games. Just gut feeling. What happens this year? What do you think, Arash?
Listen, I mean, if he's healthy and he starts the season, I mean, I don't suspect that – I'm not going to say he's for sure going to get hurt. Now, again, a year ago, I think everyone was pleasantly surprised when Matthew Stafford started every game except for the last game and he sat because the Rams had already clinched the division. And so – listen, the year prior to that, he got hurt and he missed a couple of games. So I don't know exactly. I mean, that's beyond even being a doctor. That's like you're prognosticating the future and saying Stafford's going to miss, you know, 4 games or 5 games or something like that. So, you know, my hope is that if he's healthy and he's able to start the season, that he will play the majority of the season.
About the running back room, because Kyren Williams on a contract year, and it feels like the Rams just keep drafting running backs every year. Who do you think gets a majority of the carries?
It'll be Kyren Williams, and you know, and he was really so thankful that the Rams gave him that long-term extension, or at least, you know, long-term for a tailback these days with a 4-year extension, which he didn't hold out, and I think the Rams appreciated that. So again, these are guys that you're not going to see at all during the preseason. You're really not going to see them practice a ton. But he's looked good so far in camp. Watching him in the scrimmage against the Cowboys a couple of weeks ago, he looked good. So that will be their workhorse. Now, you know, again, they do such a great job drafting, and there's always like a young player who kind of, in my view, kind of comes out of nowhere, like Puka Nacua. But Kyren Williams will be their top back for sure.
There it is. 4 years last year, $23 million. Okay, good. So we got the running back room clear. Can you tell us about the Olympic Arena naming rights?
Yeah, you know, for the first time in Olympics history, the naming rights that are on a stadium or an arena will be kept. Now, there's a process there. So, for example, the first ever arena naming rights deal in Olympic history will be Honda Center. Again, so what the Olympic Committee, what the IOC will do, they will go to SoFi and say, listen, obviously we have all these events at SoFi Stadium. If you want it to be called SoFi Stadium for the Olympics, this is how much it will cost you. If not, it will be called the Inglewood Stadium. I know that sounds crazy, but for years and years and years, like, that's what it has been. Like, again, it's a little bit confusing to fans, certainly here in Los Angeles, when they are saying, you know, where will gymnastics be? And then, you know, that'll be at the downtown arena. And it's like, which one? And it's at crypto.com arena. So they're going to go to all these companies and try to squeeze every last penny that they can from them.
And then according to the LA Times, a little bit of buyer's remorse. So why would LA want to back out of the Olympics?
I mean, no one's ever made, like, the last Olympics or the first Olympics to make a profit was the one in Los Angeles in 1984. So you are seeing with the naming rights deals and a lot of these other things that they're trying to do. I mean, generally speaking, no city makes a profit by hosting the Olympics. This is sort of an opportunity to showcase to the world how beautiful your city is and all that great stuff. The one good thing about Los Angeles, though, is that they have not built a stadium for the Olympics that will be a parking lot or will be torn down after the Olympics. I mean, every arena, stadium, whatnot, except for some of these temporary venues, they are already in use, whether it's Crypto.com Arena or the Intuit Dome or SoFi Stadium or Dodger Stadium. When you go down the list, there is a ton of stadiums. The only weird thing to me still is that softball will be held in Oklahoma. That is still very weird to me.
Arash Markazi, CEO of the Sporting Tribune, is on the horn with us. Dodgers get the job done over the weekend against the Padres, smacking around the Padres. Doesn't mean this is over at all. There's still plenty of time, and the Pod Squad is very good. On Sporting Trib Live, what do you guys talk about in terms of confidence now with the Dodgers? Do you guys feel, especially Grant, because I know he was going crazy, Grant Mona, last week, do you feel like they've righted the ship, or is it still very much a tenuous situation because of the health of the team?
Well, it was so interesting, you know, because they Diego Padres in a very much a must-win situation, the biggest series to date this season for the Dodgers. And then they follow that up with a loss to the Colorado Rockies. So again, you know, I mean, you know, we all expect to see them win that series. But now, this weekend, back at San Diego, Petco Park, another Dodgers-Padres big series here. And again, in front of the fans in San Diego, it'll be sold out, it'll be rocking, it'll be tremendous. But yeah, I mean, listen, I think a lot of Dodger fans are still very cautious about this team. And again, they're not healthy. But that being said, it's more than that. You know, I mean, guys are not playing as well as they did in the past. The number one guy is Mookie Betts. And we find out that he has this closed-door meeting with Dave Roberts, and what was said there, we're not quite sure. But there's a lot happening with this team. And certainly the vibes that they had a year ago when they won the World Series are not there this season.
Arash, I saw a story today in the LA Times by Shaken about a gondola at Dodger Stadium. I'm way out of the loop on this one. What the heck is happening?
So Frank McCourt has been trying to do this sort of gondola that will take fans from, I don't know if it's downtown LA or Koreatown or nearby. So you hop, you park there conceivably and take the gondola to Dodger Stadium. It looks horrendous. It looks terrible. It also is not like Dodger Stadium is a 50,000+ seat stadium. Like, if you've ever been in a gondola, it seats four people per car. Like, the minor dent that this is going to put into the traffic and the parking is ridiculous. And by the way, the fact that Frank McCourt even has a say so in this, because the Dodgers could not find a way to buy the team without giving McCourt the parking, is still wild to me. But anyways, the gondola is not going to happen. The gondola has no chance of happening.
When you said Frank McCourt, I was like, did you just have like a something wrong in your brain? Like something clicked?
Whoa, no, wait,
wrong guy? Or are you like, okay, Frank McCourt? Oh, no. Okay. I saw you guys bounce around MLB expansion. Bobby Manfred's talking about this. Listen, I'm far from a traditionalist, but I don't know what he's doing here. And I'm uncomfortable getting rid of the AL and the NL. This regional thing, I don't know what he's talking about with that's better for TV. Do you understand what he's getting at?
I do. I mean, listen, they have to reimagine the league. And I know that that's a trendy phrase, but I mean, they got to make the league younger. A lot of that goes into their new media rights deal. So whether it's, you know, reshaping the league, getting rid, you know, because it's very confusing for like younger sports fans to, you know, way back in the day, kids, like the American League and the National League were two separate leagues. That's, they had separate rules and separate presidents and things like that. So I don't agree with that. Listen, I mean, I think that they've done enough to enhance the game, change the game, improve the game. The one interesting thing that I did think about when he brought up expansion was Las Vegas, because that was my biggest thing about what's going on with the Athletics and the stadium at the Trop and all that stuff, is that I think Vegas felt like, we don't know when expansion is going to happen. The commissioner's not talked about it. It may never happen. It may happen 10, 15 years from now. Let's get a team while we can. Well, I mean, and maybe, you know, it's too late, but the success that an expansion Major League Baseball team would have in Las Vegas as opposed to the Oakland, Sacramento, Las Vegas Athletics would be incredible. That was my first thought. Like, man, if they're going to expand, they should expand to Vegas and let the A's figure out their deal in the Bay.
Portland.
Or go to please. Portland, exactly.
We'll do that. Kofi McCombany, Arash Markazi is with us. I saw you were very much into the NBA schedule release last week. One thing I did notice was a chart of national NBA nights. It's every day. It's every day and every night. And now it's just a matter of kind of figuring out how to find it.
You know, listen, I think this is just the new reality of sports fans, however, is that like you really, if you love the NBA, and also if you love the National Football League, if you're a sports fan, you're going to have to get all these streaming services, right? Because like if you want to watch every game, like you can't just have your Spectrum or DirecTV or cable or whatnot. Like you really do need Prime and Netflix and Apple TV and go down the list of every streamer. And so it's on one hand, extremely frustrating. But the NBA, it's like, who's going to remember? Oh, it's Tuesday night. That means it's like Amazon Prime NBA night. Like, I don't think fans are going to really care about that.
Okay, I got to close with this discussion. I'm not sure how much you have gotten into this yet, but Deshaun Foster is shutting down a lot of his practices, restricting access. I'll just tell you what he was telling the media. He's the UCLA football coach. He said, yeah, you guys film our practice and put it online. If I was an opponent for another team, I'd look right at your guys' stuff and see what's going on. So for them not to get a beat on Tino, Sinceri, the OC, or depth or anything else that's going on, that's why it's closed. I mean, I'll use UNLV as an example. I'm at most of the practices. They tell us not to film at certain times.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy. And they also pay attention. If something goes out, they will call you and be like, hey, we were working on something there, pull it down. The other thing is, if there's a violator who keeps putting out videos of your plays or really secure parts of practice, then that's the end of their access. I don't see like this has to be some secure thing where you shut it all down.
No, it is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the fact of the matter is USC went this direction a year or two ago with Lincoln Riley, and like UCLA really have the ability to be the media darling team. Like, yeah, listen, if you want to talk to the players and Deshaun Foster and get to watch practice, like go to UCLA. Like the fact that they are doing this in a city that has the Rams, the Chargers, USC, you know, if you want to go to other sports, Dodgers, Lakers, like just what's going to happen is no one's going to go to UCLA. And so that's already kind of begun to happen, where if you're only going to make the coach available and you're not going to make players available and you can't shoot practice. But to your point, Steve, every team knows how to do this, and you get B-roll and you shoot the guys stretching. Yep. and that's it. Like, who's shooting like 11 on 11? Like, that's ridiculous.
Totally ridiculous. I won't specify what was being worked on, but we were doing an interview, and over the shoulder of someone being interviewed, the Rebels were working on something, and they were like, hey, make sure you don't put that out on the web. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's that easy. And if people want to be jackasses, then you don't go to practice, right? Arash, when are you back? I need you to do a feature in conjunction with Willie Ramirez on the new Al Davis. Tom Brady and his glasses and his skinny jeans and his sneakers, but more importantly, the white satin jacket. So what great. What owners in the NFL, two of them like MD and Tom Brady, can pull off this much white? The conditioning is amazing. I can't wear white.
I love it. So I will be there for the first game of the season, the Monday Night Football game, Raiders Chargers, right after, of course, as you guys know, Canelo and Crawford at Allegiant Stadium. So it'll be a fun-filled weekend. So that'll be the next time you see me out there.
You're the man. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you. Bye.
And there he is, Arash Markazi. We'll get him to stop in at Whiskey Stadium. Can't do it this Saturday, but Griffin will be out there this Saturday, Whiskey Stadium, right across the street from Allegiant Stadium. 11A to 1P, Griffin and Cofield and Company on the scene, giving out prizes, signing up for additional prizes. Also, unbelievable food with the Mullen menu that includes a Mullen burger or a chicken cheesesteak. That menu is great because they really have held in line with the prices. Again, it's one of those places where we're not doing the $27 sandwich. It's affordable. It's a great place, good place to hang out. And they've got the Mullen Challenge, which I think at some point Big Fella is going to try. It includes a slider, a Mullen burger, fries, tots, a chicken Philly, chicken wings. If you want celery and carrots, you can do it. There is a time limit. You have to eat within the time limit. But if you get it done, they have a special edition collector's item, Dan Mullen t-shirt. And I think the thing I got the biggest kick out of is if you get it done, it's free. They have a wheel, right? So they'll spin the wheel and be like $30 off, $10 off, other prizes. I think like four of the spots on the wheel are another Mullen challenge.
Oh my God.
Let's go. We can do two. The wheel of food and discounts. It's Whiskey Stadium. It's coming up this Saturday, 11 o'clock with the one, the only Griffin. We'll go into the grab bag next. And we definitely got to hit on what is happening with week zero. There are some good games, man. I think people are sleeping on Fresno going up against Kansas.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Alex White is here. Alex, of course, works with South Point Studios. Your show is on Monday to Friday. What time?
10 a.m. Pacific time. On YouTube, yeah.
You also work with the Aviators. I heard that you saw a Rebel football player out there.
Yes.
What was going on?
Chief Borders, he threw out a first pitch. Very nice kid. Big kid. So that tells you about the UNLV transfers that are coming in. But he was very excited to tell me that he started with Dan Mullen in Florida. And then looking him up, he has made a few stops there, Florida, Nebraska, and then Pitt, his last one. So, yeah, he did good. Very nice. And I hope he has a great year. I said, just beat Boise, please.
What'd he say?
He said, yeah, of course.
He's very polite. I've had a chance to talk to him multiple times. Really polite. And a guy that a lot of players on UNLV have gravitated to because he carries himself. He's like 25 years old. He's not. But yeah, he was at Florida, then Nebraska, then Pitt. Now UNLV, the depth chart's not out yet. He appears to be slated to be one of the guys who's going to get a lot of reps as one of the edge rushers.
Yes.
So. And I was talking about how much bigger the lines have gotten, the defensive line over the years. He's part of it because he definitely looks the part of a legit edge rusher who size-wise could make it to the NFL. But to do that, you know, he's got to have a big year at UNLV, so he's max motivated. Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Kansas is getting bigger and bigger on the point spread here against Fresno State. I just think there's so much, such a lack of research sometimes. Kansas is going to blow out Fresno State. Are we sure?
I'm not so sure. I think it should be about 10 points. But, I mean, Kansas, very disappointing start last year. They do have Jalen Daniels back for, fourth or fifth year? They could come out really hot.
I
mean,
he wasn't great last year, and he wasn't healthy. So I hope he's 100% healthy. He can be dynamic, but he might be the kind of guy at DJU. But there's just diminishing returns, and maybe the next level is where he needs to be at.
But you told me about Fresno. I feel like a...
Well, I was talking about made a great hire with the head coach and Matt Entz, and they've got some good players, and that's a program that's not going to fall off. They had a lot of close games last year. They had a down year for them, but they'll be okay. Thanks to Boomer Sportsbook for helping put on Cofield and Company today. Locations at Ellis Island and Casino Valley Verde. First deposit match up to $250. It's where Nevada plays to win. The app is up at Bet with Boomer. And want to remind people, Ellis Island, a great spot. We're going to do Monday Night Football starting up on September 8th. Get out and check out their front yard Yacht Rock Brunch. I love Yacht Rock. I might have some Yacht Rock hats that I may rock this weekend at the Yacht Rock Brunch at Ellis.